Hey, church, it's great to see you this morning. Thank you very much again for being here with us. We are having issues with our projector, so there's probably not going to be a PowerPoint or anything. I do appreciate our multimedia team. They're scrambling up there. Bless them. They do a great job, and certainly appreciate all that they do. Hey, it might be time to upgrade projectors anyhow, right? So some things will Romans 8:28 it. But I am glad that you're here. Today, I just want you to know that today is the Lord's Day, number one. It's the Lord's Day, first and foremost, but it is also Master Sunday. Master Sunday's golf tournament, today's the day. Listen, Rory McIlroy he's chasing the Grand Slam. If he wins the Masters today, he'll get it. He is the leader. And then Bryson DeChambeau, a guy that I'm personally pulling for, and I would like for y'all to pull for him too. Anyhow, he's in second. They're in the final pairing. They don't tee off till 1:30, so I got plenty of time. All right? Now, I do appreciate you being here. We got a great day, a busy day, egg hunt today. I mean, it's been a great weekend. I'm going to talk more about the weekend in just a moment. But today I want to talk with you about something that's really easy to think about, easy to say, and sometimes challenging to do. For lack of a better title, I'm calling it the Ministry of Presence. It may be behind me now. No, it's up there, though. The Ministry of Presence. What I mean by that is I believe there's a ministry in being there. I believe there's a ministry in just showing up. You know, sometimes people don't need you to say anything. They just need you to be there. Last week we talked about bearing one another's burdens. This week, this is kind of like a part two to that. I just want to really expound on what it means to be involved in somebody's life. And it's completely biblical. And I'm going to explain that to you in just a moment. But you know, in order to be an expert in the ministry of presence, you do not have to have a theology degree. Isn't that a great thing? You do not have to be in a pulpit preaching, nor do you even need a title. You just need a heart that's willing to show up, a willingness to be present. Because that's what love does. Love shows up. Love is there. Love is presence. You've probably been there, right? You've gone through a tough time. You've had a heartache, you've had something going on in your life, and then somebody walks in and all of a sudden it just kind of lifts your spirits. Maybe it's somebody that's a brother or sister in Christ. Maybe it's somebody that you went to church with a long time ago. Whoever it is, that person has come and they have helped you and they've encouraged you just by being there. See, that's the ministry of presence. It's not about having the perfect words. Thanks be to God. Because I never have the perfect words. I stick my foot in my mouth way more than I should. But sometimes it's just about being there. It's about being a living, breathing reflection of God. Isn't that what God created us to be? Imagers? We should reflect Him, and that's what it means, just showing up, being there for somebody. In a world filled with noise, in a world filled with chaos, in a world filled with busyness, what people need more than words oftentimes is presence. And you may not have thought about this before, and truth be told, I've never preached a sermon like this before. But the more I thought about it, the more important I believe it is. This past weekend, I told you it was a great weekend. I want to appreciate, there were a couple ladies who are mamas of our youth group children that presented an idea to Taylor and Katie, and Taylor then put feed on it and ran with it and even moved it so that others could be involved and just did a great job, and he called it Catalyst Weekend. And I believe it'll be an annual thing from this point forward. But Catalyst Weekend is he got our teenagers and he divided them up and he put them in homes of members of this congregation. Now, I want to thank publicly Virgil and Denise Spetner. I also want to thank Randy and Tammy Miller. And I also want to thank the Kirbys, right? That was the other one, right? Okay, yes. Yes, David and Melissa Kirby. You get up here and you don't have it on your notes and you start messing up. That's why I was afraid I was going to forget somebody. But Taylor has these folks lined up. And then all of a sudden, he asked a couple more, and for whatever reason, they couldn't do it. And so then I felt sorry for him. And I'm like, hey, we'll do it. He was trying to do it without parents that are teenager parents. And, of course, we're teenager parents. But with that, I did it. Asked Michelle, hey, is this something to do? Yeah, let's do it. I was like, okay. And then I instantly regretted it. I'm just being real with you. I'm thinking, what are we thinking? You know, I mean, it's just Bo's birthday, all these things. Michelle's working, everything going on, and how are we going to get this? But I say that to say this. If you didn't sign up this year, you should next year. In our home, we had the senior guys. And Bo, I say senior high guys. Bo, of course, was in our home. And then also we had Logan Barrett. We had Austin Stebbins. And we had Ethan Hood. You put four of those guys together and they don't say many words, really. But when it was all said and done, I'd hear them laughing, cutting up, having a good time. And you know what it did? It showed those young men, and I think there were 15 teenagers total, and listen, there were others who helped. Tanya and Leisha prepared every bit of the food. Rhoda helped put it out. The host families did a great job doing activities. In fact, I wanted to go live with some of the host families because they did so many more fun things than we did. But all that to say, it showed those teenagers there are a lot of people that want to be present in their lives. And see, that's important. I mean, think about where you would be if you would have had that as a teenager. Oh, and you know what? That wasn't the best part of it. They went and they served. That's what it was about, going and serving. They showed that serving can be fun. Serving can, you know, they would tell me stories about, you know, people rolling in pain and not meaning to and, you know, different things. It was just a lot that went into it. But to me, what came out of it fit right into this lesson. It showed them, hey, this is a safe place, and I'm somebody else that's willing to be present in your lives. What a blessing that is, right? What a blessing. Next year, sign up for it. Is that a good enough plug, Taylor? All right. Let me talk about the biblical foundation of this. You think, you know, well, that's not really something we hear a lot about, and I agree with you, but is there a biblical foundation to it? Certainly is. God's always been present. God's always been one to show up in our lives. In fact, from Genesis to Revelation, God is a God who shows up. Genesis 3 verse 8, you know what He did? He walked in the garden. Exodus 3 verse 12, you know what He told Moses? I will be with you. In Matthew 1:23, Jesus Christ is also called what? Emmanuel. What does that mean? God with us. And then we have in Hebrews 13:5, Jesus saying the words, I will never leave you nor forsake you. In Romans 12:15, Paul writes, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. That seems simple, right? But in order to do that, you know what it means? We got to be there. And listen, on both occasions, when somebody is celebrating and we're there, let's celebrate with them. But if somebody's hurting, we hurt with them. But it means we're in their lives. Excuse me, we're present together. You can't do those things from a distance. just a little bit ago, I asked, Johnny asked Joseph to read, but that was the long scripture from 1 Corinthians 12. And did you hear what he said? He's talking about the members of the body. He said that every member has a function. Some of you may not lead singing. Some of you may not be able to teach a Bible class. Some of us may not be able to prepare food or do these things, but all of us can be present. All of us can be there for somebody. And that is something that I think will help the church and help the community and help the surrounding areas. Just being there. Jesus, who is our pattern, He modeled this ministry of presence, right? He didn't just send messages from heaven. He came to us. When we needed it the most, at just the right time, Jesus came to us. Think about that. How special is that? John 1:14 reads, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." That means He walked our roads. He ate food and also did it with sinners. He touched lepers that hadn't been touched in years or maybe ever. Jesus was right in the middle of it all. And He came at just the right time. One of my favorite stories is John 11, verses 32 through 36. Really, that whole story there about Lazarus. By the way, just an aside, they were able to do all the, or at least attempt and fake, most of the miracles that Jesus had done at that point. But you know the one they couldn't fake? Raising somebody from the dead. So Jesus knew that Lazarus was sick, but what did He do? He waited. Why did He wait? Because He needed to prove who He was. He needed to show them who He was. Now, what did that mean? It meant He was going to hurt some people. And it hurt Lazarus' sisters, Mary and Martha. It hurt them. In fact, they cried out to Him. But I love that Jesus, He just took it all. But before He raised Lazarus from the dead, when He got there and He was confronted by those sisters, and you know, it was really, they were crying out, they were hurting, and you can understand when people are hurting, they're crying out and they're frustrated and everything else. You'd have been here, He wouldn't have died. You remember what He did with them? He wept. Now listen, you know what? Jesus knew what He was going to do. He knew it the whole time. He was in control the entire time. But He came there and He showed up with them and He cried with them. Then He said, "Lazarus, come forth." And of course, Lazarus came forth. They got something to eat together. I mean, imagine the conversation at that meal. But Jesus Christ, who needed to prove who He was, that He could overcome death, He could raise somebody from the dead, in the process, there were people that He loved and cared for that were hurting, but He still showed up. And He cried with them. The early church also practiced presence. Our Bible reading and our Catalyst Weekend, our studies together was from Acts 2:41 through 47. In that passage, you know what they did? The early church, the early disciples, they devoted themselves to fellowship. They were together. They had all things in common. You know what that meant? They were there. They were present. They were involved in one another's lives. How many times over the years, and let's face it, if we've grown up in the church, there have been people we've gone to church with our whole lives that we know their names, we might know what they do, but we don't know anything about them. Should that be so? No way. No way. One of the things I loved, you know, and I told you, you know, I'm like, why did we do this? Talking about Catalyst Weekend, and again, I'm a real person, I'm going to speak the truth. But one of the main reasons I wanted to do it is I wanted those young men to know that our preacher is a real person. I mean, we're playing cards and I'm playing in a cut-off shirt, you know. I mean, I'm going to be me. I'm going to be them. But I want them to see that we're human. We know each other. We're involved in each other's lives. It was important to me. And I hope that's important to you. You know, to me, that's why listen, today, I don't have any kids that are going to hide eggs anymore, and some of that's a little sad. But I want to sit here for the fellowship. Listen, there's about one thing I eat at potlucks, and Michelle brings meatballs because it's protein, and I'm going to eat it. Okay, listen, no offense, y'all cook a lot of casseroles, but I don't eat them because I don't need all that. All these desserts and everything, it's not about the food for me. It's about getting to know the people. That's what the discipleship groups, right, David? That's what they're supposed to be. It's all about presence. It's all about knowing one another. We want to be the early church, then we got to be involved in each other's lives. Job's friends. God love them, right? Eli read to us from Job 2, verses 11 through 13. You know what his friends do? We beat the friends up, and listen, rightfully so, they said some really dumb things. Once again, you don't always have to open your mouth. But Job was so miserable. Remember now, this man has lost everything that he loves, save his wife who just tells him, Job, just go ahead and curse God and die. He's lost his family. He's lost his livelihood. He's lost his health. He is so miserable. With those boils all over his body, he is scraping his skin with broken pottery. He's questioning the day he was born. All these things. Now, he didn't curse God. He didn't sin with his lips against God. But he's so miserable, his friends hear about it and they show up. Read it slowly. For 7 days. They sat there with him and didn't say a word. Think about that. Sometimes I wish they wouldn't have said any words, because then they start blaming him for everything. But don't go there with me. Just understand how good of friends they were. 7 days and 7 nights, because of his great suffering, they sat with that man. And they were in his presence. I would imagine Job wasn't somebody that was easy to look at. Imagine he didn't smell very good. I imagine he was really in a very, very bad way. But they sat there with him. When someone's hurting, when someone's struggling, maybe you think, I can't go because I don't know what to say. Just be there. Again, Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. Note, it doesn't say fix those who weep. It doesn't say we have to fix them. We can't fix them. Only God can do that. But we can be there for them. You know, sometimes you have to make things practical. So what are some ways? Maybe going and sitting with somebody who's in a hospital. Listen, I get it. I'm a very private person. You know, if I go have something, I'd probably be the guy that wouldn't call y'all either. But if we do know about it, you know, sometimes it means a lot just to show up and have a prayer with a person. Maybe you don't even know how to pray. You just be there and fist bump them, give them a hug, something. You know, another good time to do it is at a funeral. People are hurting at funerals. They're weeping at funerals. Maybe you're just a shoulder they can cry on. Maybe there's a celebration that you're invited to. Maybe it's a birthday party. Maybe it's an anniversary. Maybe it's something. People are rejoicing and you're invited. Make time to go there and be there with them. Galatians 6, verse 2 is a verse we used a lot last week. Bear one another's burdens. And you know what that does? It fulfills the law of Christ, which is love. But there's always barriers, right? Satan's always going to throw up things that says, hey, nah, that's a good thing. You don't need to do it. One of those would be the word busy. Busyness. Oh, I'm too busy to visit. I'm too busy to call. I'm too busy to check in. Honestly, it was what I thought with Taylor. I'm too busy for this. We're too busy for this. But I love Taylor, and I love Katie, and I love our teenagers. So even though it really took me out of a comfort area, and Michelle out of a comfort area, I didn't want to use that as an excuse. Folks, everybody on this planet is busy. Everybody in this country, at least. Everybody in this congregation. You're busy. We're busy. But are we going to use that as an excuse to be there for others? If you're going to use that as an excuse, I'd like for you to think about Jesus Christ. You want to say there was anyone busier? He began his public ministry at 30 years old. At 33, he died. Everything we know in the Gospels that he did good, by the way, he did a lot more than that, he crammed into 3 years. You think that was busy? But he was still there for people. He was still willing to do it. He was saving the world, but he stopped to be present. Another excuse we can use sometimes is, oh, I feel awkward, it's a fear of mine. Again, you don't have to say anything, right? I do think there are times we can say wrong things. You know, if someone's struggling with infertility, don't go up to them and say, oh, it'll happen. You just got to relax. And that's not a good thing to say. Just be there with them. Somebody just lost a loved one, you know. Sometimes we don't know what to say. I'll tell you too, especially if it's a tragic situation, as much as we mean well, and maybe we need to have a class on some of these things sometimes. One thing that, and just through studies and research of my own and hearing things, you know, just saying, hey, at least they're in a better place. I get it. Don't you get that? I get that. But in that moment, that may not be the right thing to say because they want them there with them. They know that. They know that. And I'm not trying to criticize this or anything. I'm just trying to say, hey, sometimes we don't even have to say anything. Let's just hug them. Let's just be there for them. What it really comes down to, making excuses, sometimes we're just selfish. We're too inward focused. Part of discipleship is learning to look outward. Philippians 2, 3 and 4, let each of you look out not for his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Listen, I've got some more to say on this, but I had something happen to me this week, and I'm ready to close, and I just want to share the story with you. You never know when presence will matter. I like going to the gym. I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I got some gym buddies over here. I see them in the gym all the time. They see me all the time. Sometimes we like going to the gym and just getting our work done and getting out of there. But I've been going long enough that probably I have a little bit of a gym ministry. Now, sometimes people walk up to me, and listen, to be honest with you, I don't work out like this. Okay? I'm not going to wear slacks and a button down in the gym. Probably in a sleeveless shirt, probably in short pants. And I know physically some young kids may see me and say, hey, how do I look like that? And so sometimes I have time for that, sometimes I really don't, but I'll still try to make time for it. But then sometimes things happen like it did on Friday. Jeremiah is a friend of mine who works at Club 4. And Jeremiah is somebody that is hungering for the Bible. And I love that. And so sometimes I'll walk in and he'll be reading and, you know, I'll say, hey man, what you reading today? And he'll ask me what I'm reading and in my own personal life and all that. But Friday he had a question and so I stood there at the front desk and we talked about his question. But then I'm kind of finishing up my workout and he comes and he talks to me about some other things, about religion. And so Jeremiah and I, he comes to where I'm working out and we're just talking. And then along the way, there's another young man in there. And he's about 6'3", 6'4", big tall guy. And I noticed him a while back because he reminds me of one of my second cousins. He just has that look about him. And I thought it was him, but it ended up not being him. But then I start running into this guy, you know, trying not to give away too much, but he works at a local coffee shop there. And sometimes I'm in there and sometimes I take my little girl there and we have coffee together and he works there. And so I see him at the gym and so we've kind of developed, you know, he'll ask me about what I do, you know, mainly they say, how do I look like that? And I'm like, well, there's no magic pill. You just got to work. Anyhow, though, we talk and we talk and this day he first comes up to me and listen, I'm just telling you, this is a real story about how presence matters. Well, he comes up to me and I'm not trying to talk about anybody because I really have grown to love this young man. But he uses some really foul language. And listen, I hope you don't judge me on this, but my instant reaction is not, oh, don't talk to me. Why? Because I'm trying to build a bridge to that guy's heart. Now listen, I don't use bad language. I don't love bad language. But he says these words and he asked me, you know, he's wanting to borrow one of the, I don't know, pieces of equipment, and I'm like, he says some things, and I'm like, no. And then I go back, and Jeremiah and I are talking here, and we're still studying. Well, then he comes up to me later, and he's about to leave, and, you know, he's real, I'm ADHD, but he's got the H part down pat, okay? So he's this and that, and he says, hey, you going to, I said, I'm going to Yellowhammer, are you working? Probably shouldn't say where he worked. Anyhow, though. I'm going to Yellowhammer today. Are you going to be there? He said, no, I'll work this morning. He said, what you going to get? I said, well, hey, today's my cheat day, so I'm going to get something with a lot of sugar in it. And we just kind of have that conversation. And so then he makes a statement. I know it's a long story. That's why I ended everything else. But he makes a statement and he says, well, man, I'm kind of extreme and I need like all these shots and everything. He said, like, you know, when I drink alcohol, and I'm like, there's my door. I said, I never drank alcohol in my life. Neither has my wife. And we're proud of that. And I said, I know I probably don't look like it, but I'm a preacher. Well, then instantly, you know, that changed his demeanor on some things, but it opened a door. And he complimented me, and so I tried to be encouraging him, hey, man, you're doing great. You know, you look great. You know, keep it up the good work. And he said, I used to weigh 320 pounds. He weighs about 185 now, 6'4"-ish. I said, no way. Jeremiah couldn't hear him. No way, no way. He showed me a picture, and he was a really big guy. And he got made fun of a lot. And he said, I was so miserable that my parents left on a trip. And I went and blended in every drug I had, oxycodone, the whole nine yards, I put it in a blender, blended it up, and drank it because I was ready to take my life. But for some reason, my parents came back home. And they instantly took me to the hospital. They had to put charcoal down him and everything. He said, I woke up and I called them every name in the book. I was restrained or I would have attacked them because I wanted to die. And I asked him, I said, do you know Jesus? And he said, oh yeah, I know Jesus. He said, I believe it was God who led my parents back home. And he, in the middle of a gym, he starts crying. And he just needed me to hug him. So I did. And I told him, hey man, you got an ally in Jeremiah, and you've got an ally in me. He said, where do you preach? And I told him, one day he may come here. I want you to forget this story and love him, okay? But at the end of the day, you never know when you need to be in somebody's presence. Jeremiah said, this was no accident. God brought us to talk the Bible together for a reason. You see, that's real life. There's somebody out there who you don't know and I don't know that's contemplating blending up a bunch of drugs and drinking them to end their life. That's why I hate bullying. That's why I hate stereotyping people. You never know. But I'm thankful God allowed me to be in His presence. I know His name. He knows me. Maybe you are going through a hard time. Maybe we sit on the same pew with one another and we do not realize that we're all going through some hard time. There are people in here that have lost their spouses. There are people in here that have lost children. There are people in here that have lost their health. There are people in here that have lost their marriages. There are people in here that have lost their way. God still showed up. That's who we are. Just like Abraham told Lot, we be family. Today, if you're not part of the greatest family in the existence of the world, which I just so happen to believe is right here at the Azalea City Church of Christ, let me encourage you to walk this aisle. Confess the name of Jesus Christ. Be immersed in water. Allow God to contact you with His blood to come up out of that water to walk in newness of life. We're going to be there for you. You're going to be there for us. Or maybe there's somebody here that's hurting. Maybe there's somebody here that's struggling. Maybe you've got a sin that you need to repent of publicly. Whatever the need, you will be met with open arms. By me, by the elders, by this congregation, but most of all, for with God, with us, Jesus Christ. If you have a need, won't you come right now together, we stand and sing.